Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to 1 Minute Until Messiah, Free From Paul on Freedomizer Radio. We are looking forward to seeing who all joins us today on our wonderful Sabbath fellowship that we look forward to every week. So if you are joining us via the web and want to call in for a change today, you can do that at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. We hope everybody is doing wonderful, and we look forward to seeing who all can join us as well. So let me take a look at the dashboard here and see if we have anybody already on. Shabbat Shalom, area code 206, and area code 208. Aaron, how are we doing today?
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Good to hear your voice, Aaron.
Hey, good. I'm glad you can hear me. Good to hear you, too.
I sure can. And who do we have at 206 and 778?
Steven
it's
Simpson.
Me, Alex.
Oh, Alex. Welcome. Hey, how are you doing?
Alex. I'm doing okay. I got Wi-Fi calling. I didn't know I could do that before.
Oh, and you sound good, too. You don't sound like you're on a paper cup and a string anymore.
I didn't know I sounded like that before.
Yeah. I'm glad you were able to join us today, Steve. Awesome.
Someone on the other end.
Hey, it's Steven.
Hi, Steven. Glad you can make it.
Shabbat Shalom.
Peaceful Sabbath.
I hear you well, Rachel, but Aaron was kind of garbled. Was he garbled for you?
Yeah, he is a little bit garbled. Maybe that will iron out, hopefully.
My connection out here in the sticks. I'll try and see if I can clear that up. Thank you for telling me.
So how's everybody's week?
Mine's been busy.
Why don't you tell us about your new Discord?
It's called Abide.
What was the name of the person that has a new Discord?
Yep, it's Steven.
Steven. Okay, tell us about it. Sounds like something our group would be interested in and potentially our listeners as well.
Yeah, we would kind of keep it to people who are like-minded. And it's a communication platform that was made originally for gaming. And so my adult sons and daughters, they use it, and we've used it for years. I haven't used it a ton with them, just over the years some. They use it a lot. If they want me to send them a link or something, they ask me to send it in Discord. So we have our own server for the family. We call it the family room. And I know that there are ministries like Noel Hadley, and I know Zen Garcia, and I'm not on their servers anymore, but those guys have Discord servers. So when you join the Discord, you'll see that there's a general text chat. And that's a channel. It's called General. And then there's subject channels like Anti-Paul, early church history. I have vegan, vegetarian, I have flat earth. There's one on the calendar. There's one about anti-sacrifice. And there's a mud flood that Alex and I added. And then there's a voice channel. And so when you enter the voice channel,
awesome.
You can... Like, we had Debbie, Alex, and I all in a conversation together. We could share desktops. We could also do webcams if you have that. And so when you go online on it, on Discord, right now I look on there and I can see that Alex is online. And there are a total of 10 members right now. And so if somebody comes online, you can see that they're online. And you could send them a private message to join you in the voice, and then you could be talking to each other.
That's great.
That sounds really interesting. Yeah, that sounds really cool. I watched a YouTube video that somebody had done a screen recording of.
Mm-hmm. Follow this little path.
They did a screen recording of their Discord that they were doing. In fact, it was Anti-Paul. I should have saved it. I might have saved it in my playlist on What's Up with Paul playlist. I'll see if I can find it, and I'll share it with you, Stephen. It was really neat. Boy, they really hammered on Paul, too. It was quite the Discord group. And they were sharing all kinds of scriptures and everything simultaneously and bringing other people on to make comments and stuff. It looked like a pretty neat deal, as long as it's working smoothly.
Oh, we might have to join their channel, too.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it, and I'll share the video with you. It was a few months ago, if I remember right. And I believe a lot of them were in the group that were working on the Paul document, or whatever it's called, Parable of the Vineyard Christian Truthers.
No, it was Justin Best, Christian Truthers.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't running the Discord. It was another guy in the group.
Of course, Justin is not doing so well. And Adam is Adam is just saying he's not going to talk about Paul, but he's wishy-washy on it, and so is Noel Hadley.
Yeah,
very much
Noel,
so. I hear people say that, but I don't know what they mean as far as
Justin
goes. You
have to listen to one of his last videos. Oh, Justin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Justin and his wife, they're, well, he's 37, and I think she's a little bit younger. They're kind of having a pre-midlife crisis, it seems like now, and I don't blame him for walking away. He wasn't prepared for what went down after he did that part one and part two, 50 Reasons Why Not to Quote Paul.
Well, Adam didn't side with him. Adam wanted to keep his followers, and they were
right.
Exactly. It's all about money. Yeah, money
and
followers.
And Justin is post-traumatic syndrome from being in the military. He's very he's very fragile, and so he's just lost it.
I think so. Yeah, we need to be praying for him lifting him up as much as possible.
Absolutely. It takes a lot of fortitude to come to truth and stand against the societal norms.
And he was attacked.
Most people
horribly.
Side with societal norms, in doing so, you can't endure until the end and side with the enemy at the same time, unfortunately. So it pays off to stand for truth, but it takes a lot of fortitude.
It's just really unfortunate, though, because groups like the Kingdom in Context, Sean Griffin, David Wilbur, Rob Skiba, others, they were bullying him so hard, and now they try to use his falling away as evidence that leaving Paul leads to leading the Messiah. It's like they don't take any ownership over the fact that they helped cause it by bullying him constantly. And they weren't honest at all. They were completely deceitful in their responses. They didn't address his points. They mostly made up their own points in his name that they, quote-unquote, addressed. And they didn't even address things, their own points, effectively. They didn't address any of it, honestly. Instead, just hammered down on him with the rest of the community and then don't own up to the fact that they created this situation. It's like, you guys need to be honest. You guys helped cause him to fall away by your persistent bullying. But they won't admit that. I personally talked with Sean. I messaged him, and he basically just told me I have no idea what I'm talking about and shouldn't be a busybody. Like, I'm like, dude, at this time, I was a Paul believer when I messaged him at this time. I said, hey, Sean, I mean, I agree with you here, but you're not handling the issue properly. He's really hurt and you're bullying him. And he called me a busybody and basically never talked to me again after refusing to hear me on the matter. And that was one of the things that led me to actually searching out the matter. After seeing how terribly they treated him, I realized there's a serious problem here and I need to actually investigate this matter. And then the truth became very clear. But,
yeah. I agree with you on Sean Griffin there. There's a couple other ones in there, like Kim Heidelberg or however you say it, Heidelberg. A couple of those, a few of those guys that
the whole
nailed
thing
on them hard. Yeah.
Because I
absolutely
agreed with them at the time. I was
on
their
side. Polling.
Yeah, a polling. Yep. They need to apologize.
It was the bad thing that actually opened me up to searching out the matter. That was the final nail in the coffin that allowed me to actually be honest about the matter and search it out. Because before that, I was really resistant to searching out the matter. And then I saw their terrible fruit, their absolute dishonesty and bullying. And I was like, this is not the right spirit here. I need to actually put the time in to search out the matter. And then it was so obvious right once that happened.
It is. That should be enough to make you walk away from a group like that. Yeah. Unless you believe that we're to deliver somebody's flesh over to Satan so that their soul will be saved in the day of the L-O-R-D, like Paul said. I don't believe that at all. We're not to deliver anybody or push anybody in that direction. It was really disgusting what they did. They did not cover it point by point. And I think they were probably afraid. I think it was probably one of those knee-jerk experiences for them, that definite cognitive dissonance.
Oh,
very you know,
much.
You think that, yeah.
The Sean challenged him to a debate. Because he, honestly, his points didn't convince me. Watching, and like, he had good points. Justin did have good points, but they weren't concrete enough to convince me at the time. And Sean tends to challenge people to debates that he disagrees with to basically prove his point. But then I studied out the matter, and I began talking and rebutting him on his own page before he deleted me. But I challenged him to debate. I said, "Hey, you typically debate these things. Let's debate this. If you want to talk about Saul here, you debate almost everything. So let's have a conversation here. Let's debate this subject." And he turned me down, saying that, "Oh, well, you know, we're fixing our. It's not going to go anywhere. Like, you've debated every other subject with people when you were confident you would win, but you wouldn't take me up on this one because you know you would lose."
You would. You would clean them up.
It's so blatant. Like, but that was the only time I've ever seen him turn someone down for a debate. And it was the moment I took up his debate and his challenge that he gave to Justin. I took him up. And he would not take
happy
it.
Happy Sabbath, 864. Just wanted to throw that in there.
Hey!
Feel free to join
Sabbath.
In if you'd like. Hi.
Hi, Christy.
Hi, Christy.
Shalom, homie.
Hello. Hello.
Shalom.
Glad you could join us.
Thank you. Me too. I'm so glad, Alex, you can get on this week too. I was going to be going to. I was going to offer to, you know, I'm driving right now. I'm heading home from a picnic. So, anyway, it's so nice to hear all y'all.
Much appreciation and love towards you.
We were just talking a little bit about Stephen's Discord that he's put together and the group that he has. I think he said he has 10 going on there. I'm looking to join here probably this next week, Stephen, as soon as I get my internet and everything connections hooked up right. I've just been under the gun this last week. I moved from the Coeur d'Alene Sandpoint corridor in North Idaho, moved a little bit further east over into the gold mining area of North Idaho, up in a draw. It's so nice up in the woods here. Getting out of the, it seemed like little North Idaho there is just filling up with Oregon and California, and you'd almost have to take a picture if you saw Idaho license plate. It was crazy. The market here, the real estate market, is up 315%. It is, and I don't want to move anyplace else.
Wow.
It's crazy here. Of course, you see the people that are just mass exodus out of California right now. I can't believe the stuff that state is doing. I can't believe it's part of America.
I moved into Alberta a little bit, and it got just as bad.
Oh, yeah. I think they're trying to be like Canadians up there, you know. That Justin Trudeau you guys have up there is quite the puppet too.
Well, Alberta was supposed to be different. They were publicizing the guy who got into power. He was saying that he wasn't going to enforce the vaccinations and stuff, and so it led to people like myself. Well, a friend of mine first going to Alberta to get out of it, but then he went back on his words, and now sure. I've been seeing them enforcing the vaccine passports regularly, and so I've just been refusing to go to these places now.
Yeah. Yeah, these politicians are liars. They're used car dealers or salesmen, you know, basically. A little bit better with words.
I'm in the South, and there's a mass exodus of people from New York, Connecticut, moving down here, too, because of the same reason. I guess California exodus as well. So many things being mandated. I think people are just tired of it.
Absolutely. And there's kind of a problem to that, too. If we move away, where are all the strong men and women that are going to speak up for the voices that, you know, are for the timid people? Where are the mighty men of valor? If they're leaving this country, if they're leaving the places that need them the most, I see it as just being, they're kind of moving, having a shell game going on right now. I think a lot of this stuff is being done on purpose. So, and it's really changing the economy and the, in different places in the States here. People here in Idaho are afraid that it's going to turn into another Colorado where it just gets inundated with so much money from places like Southern California, where they have no concept, they have no reality. It just doesn't, they have no concept of the value of a dollar. And they turn it into where you have the poor and then the rich, and there's no middle class anymore. It's a real struggle. It becomes a real struggle for people. And the last thing I want to worry about is money. I don't know about you, but I'm trying to get away from it, where I don't need it.
Amen.
To me, it's another form of a mark of a beast, you know. That you know, without it, you can't buy or sell, basically, or at least buy. I think we need to go back to a barter system. I do whenever possible. I always. Whenever I'm doing business with somebody, I ask them, should we leave Uncle Sam, that pervert, out of our business? Should we just pay cash and you don't have to write me a receipt? Or do a trade? You know, I do a finished carpentry and I trade somebody for mechanic work, things like that. Their specialties. We need to go back to doing things like that. Definitely need to be growing gardens right now. Much as we can figure out what grows the best in the areas, and then with all this garbage that they're spraying on us from the skies, I know that has a lot to do with the flu and cold season that's going on right now with a lot of respiratory problems. It has the same symptoms that they want to portray, you know, that we have a disease now, which is now called a disease, which is the seasonal flu. Still have a friend down in San Diego that has a virology lab down there. He doesn't work for the government. He does third-party testings and things like that. But he insists that everything COVID-2 on up to 19 or whatever they have it at today, it's all fiction. It's all Star Trek, you know. It's things that they would like us to believe, but it's just not true. And there's so many lawsuits, even if you go back and if you can look, he was telling me this from over 20 years ago, just on people waiting, virology labs, waiting for just the COVID-2 virus to be sent to them so that they could actually look at it and work on it, reverse engineer it. They've been getting so many excuses, and they've been, a few have been given, they're waiting on grants, but they can't get the grant until they actually have this isolated virus, which has never been isolated, and there's no such thing. It's mind-boggling. It's so simple, though, that we just need to understand that. We're being lied to big time.
Have you seen the stuff on the Hydra vulgaris?
Hydra vulgaris.
Yeah, it looks like a tentacle squid-like thing, and it's in the vaccine.
Yeah, I have seen a few videos of that.
Yeah, if they chop it up, it doesn't die. It makes multiple copies of itself.
Interesting, yeah. And I read something, and I couldn't figure out, by the way, the wording. It was like, does the graphene help it mass produce, or does it mass produce using the graphene? I couldn't figure that out, the way it was worded. It seems that it's able to use the graphene somehow, connected with it in some way of communication.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out, isn't it?
Yeah. All I can say is just stay the heck away from it. And I feel really bad for anybody taking it right now. And there is a Dr. Judy Mikovits, who has in the past worked on different vaccines, and she was also very instrumental in reverse engineering vaccines, and they threw her in prison for a little while, if I remember right, because of the disclosure clauses that she signed. She put herself in trouble by coming out and giving full disclosure on things that she shouldn't have been talking about. She actually agreed not to talk about these things, but it's a matter of conscience there. Definitely. And I'm glad she did. She's been hit pretty hard. But she said here just a couple of weeks ago, I think I shared it on a few Facebook groups there, that they're finding that pine needles, if you grind them up and then steep them for about 10 to 20 minutes in some water, that it's actually helping clean the body, clean the virus, or clean the vaccine out. Whether this is true or not, I don't know. But she was pretty excited about it. She said, do you think they would actually release something like this help me out, Steve. Steven, an antidote.
Yeah.
And she's saying that that's the antidote. She's very insistent on it. And I'm trying to figure out which pine needles it is. I know some people ordered some from Korean, I think, pine needles. I think here in the States, and I'm just going off of what I remember from biology and forestry, as the white pine and its root structures protect the other pine trees and the other trees in the forest, and they're not the most desirable for the lumber companies, the lumber industry, as far as milling up that wood from that tree isn't the most desirable, but they're finding that when they replant large acreage, large clear cuts, that they need to mix in white pines because it keeps things like pine beetle, other things, root rot for the other trees. It's amazing what the white pine does for the other trees. And I'm thinking, I'm not for sure, but I'm thinking that that's probably the best pine needle. But it sounds like any pine needle will work. And I know there's some people in the TRS, the heavy metal site that I've group that I'm in there on Facebook. I've been using this TRS now for a couple of months, and it's a heavy metal detox. It's supposed to be zeolite on steroids type thing, and it's actually breaking up all of the heavy metals in your body, especially in the brain, like around the pineal gland, and getting it crossing the blood-brain barrier. And that's been pretty difficult to do, and they found that it's actually doing that. And just one of those things that, besides elderberry syrup, I've been taking that now for 5 years, haven't had a cold or a flu in 5 years, had a couple of runny noses, but that's about it. And I don't avoid people that have cold or flu anymore. I never really did.
We did the same thing. We did the same thing with the elderberry. In fact, we got a couple different kinds growing in our yard now. They aren't producing fruit this year, but next year they will. We almost had fruit this year.
Awesome. Is that the Sambuca, the black elderberry? It's supposed to be the strong one.
Yeah, exactly which kind. I'd have to ask my wife, and she's not in the room. So, but we have honeyberry, elderberry, and something else.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah, she's got quite the garden growing, and she's buying fruit trees now, but small ones that she can keep in a pot that are kind of dwarf fruit trees.
Excellent. I'm still worried about what they're spraying on us. I'm seeing indications around here. Maybe it's a combination with the 5G, 6G. I don't know if everybody heard this or not. When they passed 5G through Congress, if you read it, they also simultaneously passed 6G. And knowing the Star Wars from the Reagan era and things like that, things that we wind up paying for, we've already paid for. We wind up making something a second time, a backup plan. And I think they've already ramped up 6G in areas. I mean, it's already been approved. And I think along with that and what they've been spraying on us from the air for years, I think a combination of that is killing off our trees and our plants, and our gardens have really had a tough time with it. And we know that they're manipulating the weather as best they can, trying to cook us out in the summer, and in the spring you just go from cold to hot, so you don't really have a good gestation period for growing. It's really hard on our plants. I know people lost a lot of crops this last summer. Between the barium and aluminum that they're dropping on us, and then the frequencies, you can even see the frequency in the clouds and the thin, wispy, milky white that they do from the chemtrails. Mm-hmm. You can see it when they hit it with the frequency later on. It has a real strange ripple effect. Almost like you dropped a rock in the water. It just ripples out from places. But it's killing the top of the trees around here. It's killing them from the top down. And some people said that that's beetles, but beetles aren't really, it's just different around here. Sorry to ramble on, but I think we need to start looking at other things like potatoes or other things like that that would be, we don't have a greenhouse, but something that's protected by the dirt. Other things to eat, you know, that we don't have to rely on fruit trees or them spraying the stuff in the air on us.
And you can't drink their water either.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We drive 2 hours and go get spring water once a month.
It's good that you can do that.
There's an app, I think it's Springs Near Me or something like that. If you search on Google for Springs Near Me, you'll find the app. There's a web page, and you can find, and then there'll be like reviews and photos of it. Go see if there's one near you.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things I like about this area over here in North Idaho is that the water, we have a huge water table underneath. They call it an aquifer. They've done some really weird things, though, but rebuild over the biggest aquifer that we have here by Coeur d'Alene. They put a train refueling station there, major train tracks. There's four tracks that run through it to Canada and over to, like, North Dakota for the oil and all the way across the states. A lot of Canadian traffic. Trains coming out of Canada here full of coal, and they stop right over the biggest aquifer in North Idaho and have giant tanks of oil and diesel built right over the top of it. It's just some of the things that they do just make no sense unless you're onto them then it's like, yeah, it kind of makes sense for them to do that. Oops, we accidentally poisoned your aquifer with diesel, you know. But we have really good water up here. It tests and the pH, it turns blue, and they're not adding anything to it. They're certainly not adding any fluoride. I heard that Washington was trying to get that passed here, what, 2 months ago again? And people in the big cities were voting for it. They're saying, yay, we want white teeth, holes in brain and white teeth. Huh? That was Spokane. Looks like it was, I guess they shot it down. Which I found surprising, actually. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm pretty disappointed in our society here, especially in America. I think Kissinger was correct when he said that we're ripe and ready to be taken advantage of. Back when he said that never let a good crisis go to waste. And we know that they're creating the crisis, and they're controlling the narratives on both sides. That's the Hegelian dialectic.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing where they can come up with in Scripture to pull one over on the Christians. You know, they'll quote Romans 13 to us. You know, we're supposed to obey those that supposedly
mm-hmm.
Yah has, you know, obey those men that Yah has put over us for our good. I mean, paraphrasing Paul there in chapter 13, he essentially says that even if Yah puts the devil in charge over you, it's for your own good and you're to obey the devil. I mean, these are wicked men that we see, and women that are playing politics, and you can't go anywhere unless you're in bed with them. You won't get over. You won't even become a mayor. It seems like it's from the mayor on up. And I've talked to one who was retired, and he says you basically have to. He was in for one term, and he said they want you to sign your life away. It's almost a covenant you make in blood with them to stay in power as long as you do their bidding. They leave you alone. As long as you're doing their bidding when they want you to, no questions asked, they don't care whatever else you do.
I commented on Trustin JC's YouTube. He was making videos going, and hey, and he's on point about Saul. But he was making promotions about the vaccine, saying that, people like Rob Skiba and other people who died, they basically just had it coming, saying that they're not heroes because they should be getting the vax. And I said, no, that's unclean. Here's ingredients here. Scripture says they're unclean. You're not supposed to even ingest them, let alone inject them. And it literally calls it in Revelation 18 and Revelation 9, it calls it drug sorcery, pharmakia, witchcraft, and it says the world doesn't repent. He responded by saying that the serpent that healed the people from the snake bites in the Torah was essentially a vaccine. That was his rebuttal. He says, no, that's... Yeah, the serpents, when they look upon it and they're healed, that's basically a foreshadowing of vaccines. No.
Yikes.
Well, in a way, you're right. You know,
yeah.
evil serpents, and the snake bite is the same thing as a syringe, right?
Yeah, it's basically the opposite. They were healed. If we want to talk about parallels here, then you can say the snake bite is the vaccine, and then the snake on the totem heals you from the vaccine.
Yeah, I know. Laverne is – I was in his group, and he was pro-sacrifice, and like I told you, Alex, that went round and round and round about it, and even when I bring up the tens of thousands of animals being slaughtered for the dedication of Solomon's Temple and the blood flowing like a river out of the place, they all agreed that that was good, and I was standing alone against it.
Oh, my goodness. No, I would have been there right with you. Now, my friend Butch and I, we figured out how much cattle and the square acreage there of the city limits, there would be somewhere about 6 inches of blood. People would have been standing in 6 inches of blood.
The smell of the death must have been horrendous.
Yeah, and the flies. Oh, my goodness. From that, I think, personally, I think that was messed with. I can't say that that really ever happened. We don't have, there's no evidence up there of that much blood soaking into the dirt anywhere, which is kind of strange. It was it one of those things that was added later
well,
to make it make believe?
Have you seen the underground under the Temple Mount area where there's three areas and one has a stone wheel for pressing the olives into oil, and then there's these V-shaped grooves in the ground, and then there's a trench. You seen that?
Yeah.
And there's a seal under there, 12 stones. Well, those V grooves are for where the priests would stand and slaughter the animals, and then there's a trench to carry the blood away.
Yeah. I did. I liked the one on under the City of David. They call the City of David where they found a smaller temple. And it also has access to that natural spring there. I believe the naked archaeologist is. Yeah, that's it. And
and that's where the temple really was at the Gihon.
Yeah, they'd have to have fresh water.
And the what they call the Temple Mount was the Fort Antonia, was the Roman fortress.
Yep, and that's who their allegiance is to.
Yeah.
You know, we have no king but Caesar. They confessed it, and that was back then. Now we have a bunch of Gogites, descendants of Gog, living there, saying that they have no affiliation with any tribe, dancing around with their Russian fezes on, swinging chickens, and calling us when we call them out on it. On their things that they're doing that are against Torah, that they say are Torah, we're finding out it's just made up traditions from people that didn't know Torah, and it just became a part of Judaism. You know, when we point these things out to them, they call us anti-Semitic. Doesn't that just blow anybody else's mind but mine? These are not even Semites, and they're calling us anti-Semitic. That's their reaction for when we call them out on an obvious mistake, and some of them are even abominations when you point that out to them. Yeah. You can't have that blue snail juice on your tzitzit or on your thread, you know, running through your garment. That's a snail's an abomination, alive or dead. You're not supposed to touch it. Who's going to squeeze that juice out, and why are you going to put it on your clothing? But I'm anti-Semite for pointing that stuff out, you know.
I had a quote-unquote Jew telling me that the vaccines were determined by the sages and the rabbis to be good and acceptable. And I'm like, look, you're literally unclean ingredients here. You're going against the Torah. And he says, no, these people, they're authoritative. He's like, oh, you're building your own foundation here. You're doing your own thing. You're trusting in yourself, but you don't have any foundation. I'm like, you're literally doing the same thing that the Pharisees did here, using your traditions in place of the commandment. Don't tell me that it's okay to inject something that you can't eat. He says injecting is different than eating. No, it's the difference is it's not filtered. The digestive system, it breaks it down. Now you're literally just putting in. It's worse. You're telling me that these people who are telling you to go against what the Torah clearly teaches are authoritative. If you can't think about this for yourself, then what's the point of talking? I'm not just going to listen to someone who claims to be authoritative just because, though, when they're clearly going against the Torah here. call your rabbis, call them sages. That title means nothing if they're going against the Torah here. Like, it says to that such people are false prophets and they're sent to test you. If you can't test this, then you're not qualified to talk about the Torah.
Thank you. Yep, I agree. All right. Scripture says that much. That's parts like that just blow my mind. I don't think they're reading. I really don't think they are. I think, like the majority of Christians, they lie about it. Oh, I study Scripture. Oh, I read the Bible. I really don't think they do. I mean, they might have their little Wednesday night study group or something, you know, their little small groups. But they're studying somebody else's words. They're studying somebody else's commentary with a little bit of Scripture thrown in here and there. They're really not searching and digging from the original foundation. You know, from the foundation. And speaking of that, I mean, how about piercing your body? Let's just look at it that way. Are we to pierce our bodies? They might argue, well, you know, have a sage or a rabbi pop in and say, well, we're not supposed to wear an earring or you know, something like that. But what about when the servant gives himself, when he's ready after the, you know, during the seventh year, like a jubilee year, where they're no longer a servant anymore or, you know, subservient to that person that they owed or for whatever reason became their servant for that 6 years. And during their seventh year release, if they decide that they want to stay in servitude and be a part of that family, they're able to take an awl and nail their earlobe to the doorpost, signifying that they are giving themselves to that family. That's a form of a piercing, like piercing your ears or whatever. But as far as the other piercings for different Elohim, as it said, you're not to cut yourself. You're not to pull out your beard as the heathens do, as the pagans and the heathens do. Another way of looking at it, simply, are we to pierce our body? And the life is in the blood, as Yusha said. We're not to, and it's also in the Torah. The life is in the blood. We are not to drink the blood. We are not to mess with the blood. And like you said, Alex, they're skipping the stomach and directly injecting into the bloodstream or into the muscle, which finds its way into the bloodstream, completely bypassing. And I know that they've been trying to get this into us for years, not just from the sky, but magnets have been sticking to meat now for years before they even figured out that the magnets are sticking where somebody was vaccinated. You know, and after a couple of weeks, the magnets are now sticking over their heart.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't even know about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the one thing that, you know, and they need to genetically modify, and I'm talking about the enemy here. They've been needing and trying as hard as they can to genetically modify plants so that it can carry these things into us. I've been adamant about this, about people not getting their plant proteins secondhand. That's where the animals get their protein from. It's from plants, the clean animals anyway, if we're talking, you know, those that believe the dietary laws of clean meat versus unclean meat, believing it as such as that's what it's meant to be.
There's also the thing of owning a patent for the vaccine, and then if you're a genetically modified organism, the patent owner owns you. So
yeah,
just like plants that Monsanto owns, and they can take the land of the farmers,
right,
whose cross-pollination caused their crops to become genetically modified for no fault of their own. They have their land taken away. I was in Idaho many years ago, and the farmers were all in an uproar because of the legislation being passed that Monsanto could take their land. And then there is the patent is for the vaccine, and they do have the ability to have ownership over the humans that they get genetically modified.
Right. It's in a form of agreement. It's like a handshake.
And the CDC has information about zombie apocalypse on their website. Have you seen Stewart's post? I saw it before I saw Stewart's post, but.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the CDC has a zombie apocalypse webpage, what to do when the zombie apocalypse happens.
Oh, wow.
The CDC has it.
Yeah.
That's not a red flag at all.
It's not a joke. Yeah. It's not a joke.
Oh, JFK Jr. Was talking about how many patents that they have. And what did they make? $4 billion a year off of their vaccine patents? And this is the CDC. And we all imagine it as being another federal government agency that is not a nonprofit. Well, it's a profit organization. And it's sapping taxpayer dollars, too.
It's no more federal government than the Federal Reserve is.
Right, yeah, come to find these things out. It's just people aren't doing their homework, just like reading scriptures or the Bible. They're just not really doing it. Yeah, I read the Bible. No, you just watched you just watched TBN for an hour. You didn't read the Bible. There's a big difference, you know.
Or they just make up a context, their imaginary context, which is contradicted, and they say, oh, so this is how it needs to be interpreted because this person told me it should be interpreted this way. They're not diligently seeking out what the scripture says. They're trying to force it into a box that another person gave them. It's just their own thing at that point, or it's another person's thing, but it's not related to the scripture.
Right, it's that belief that we can rightfully divide the word of truth. No.
The way the man told them.
Right. But you don't have to. Paul did it for you. And by the way, quit calling him Saul. He wished to be called Paul. He changed his name, okay? And everybody who's calling him Rabbi Saul, they're not even being respectful to Paul himself. Okay, he wanted to be called Paul.
Sounds like the trans agenda.
Oh, that just cracks me up. You and I think we're having a conversation this last week on that, where the Paul followers will correct you. That's one of the first things they like to do. You mean Rabbi Saul? No, that's usually when I quote Matthew 23:8 to them. Our true Messiah, the Messiah, the only one, capital O. He said, call no man rabbi. What the heck are you doing calling Paul rabbi? Or Saul, excuse me. You know? It's another thing. It's like maybe they're reading, but they're not comprehending.
They're not comprehending because they don't want to. Which is along the lines of why Peter said in the homilies that, and the recognitions of Clement, that there isn't an excuse for ignorance in most cases because people are willingly choosing to be ignorant of what they know they don't want to hear. It's because they know what they don't want to learn, and so therefore they decide to remain ignorant on it. So it's a determination to flee the truth.
So they've actually heard a little bit of it. It's like the cognitive dissonance. You heard it. It bothered you so much that you decided not to look into it. In fact, you blatantly refuted it from your own feelings or words or whatever, but without actual proof or evidence to back up your feelings or the cognitive dissonance, and you're willfully ignorant. But you're not really ignorant, are you, at that point? We're still going to be held accountable.
Yeah, you're not truly ignorant to what you choose to be ignorant of.
Oh. It's like Yusha said, and this gospel of the kingdom, speaking of his gospel, his kingdom. And he says, and this gospel of the kingdom, when it is preached throughout the world, throughout the earth, then I will come. That means even the ones that are willfully ignorant have heard it. They're without excuse. I think if we try to keep things on a biblical, scriptural understanding, the spiritual and written understanding of the scriptures, of what Yahuwah thinks about, what he's concerned about. Is he concerned about the laws of man, the laws that, like, for instance, the laws of Corinth, the city of Corinth? Is Yah concerned about man's laws that were in place there in Corinth or his own? I believe he's only concerned about his own statutes, judgments, and decrees and commandments that he has given to us. And they are in opposition. I don't think man's rules have any merit in there. I don't believe when he speaks, I don't believe that he's including man's doctrines or man's laws in with his when he's talking about prophecy, about things happening. When we see, like, for instance, changing thinking to change times and laws, as the enemy is told that he's going to try to. But obviously, we can still find Yah's times and laws if we're really searching diligently. That's like he says, I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently will find me. That's how he can look at this. If we're going to be judged by our hearts, and he's the only one who knows, are we really diligently searching? We could be making mistakes, but are we willing to be corrected from those mistakes? We know that he allows us to go down roads that aren't his. And it's for our own good. And it's a way of testing us. For sure. Are we really his? We find out that we're going down the wrong road. Are we going to stop, put on the brakes, and back out of that? I mean, so many of us have belonged to different religious organizations, whether it be Southern Baptists or Pentecostal or Seventh-day Adventists or Mormons or Jehovah Witnesses or even been involved in all of those things, just kind of moving around, making the mistake over and over again and learning from our mistakes. I really believe that that's, Yah allows us to make these mistakes for our own good. And still, we have the truth for right out there in front of us to read. And like his son said, he will send his spirit, his ruach, and it will cause us, like he says in Ezekiel, for it to be written on our hearts and will cause us to do what he wants. That's the fruit of the spirit, which is the only spirit that I want, which is Yah's spirit. All throughout the Old Testament, when you look at it through the Law and the Prophets, when you look at it in the Hebrew, even in the Chaldean plain letters that they refer to as modern Hebrew these days, you can still see it in that too. It says the Ruach Yahuwah. It doesn't just say the Ruach, the Ruach. So that's the spirit. I'm not saying that that's the spirit that Paul was talking about, but that is the Father's spirit as the comforter, the Messiah said, and the comforter would do. Those are the fruits of the spirit. What Messiah said the comforter would do, that's the result. It's not this peace, love, and joy, and kumbaya, and loving your Greeks and your heathens and your pagans doing everything that all the nations round about you do, and say, oh, it's all good. He knows what's in my heart, you know. Merry Christmas.
He does know.
He does know.
That's where your problem is.
Spiritual audits out there. You know, not enough concern, I guess. You know, we're not going to be saved by proximity. You know, I sat next to Alex in church, and you let him in through the gate. What about me?
Well, Stephen showed me a really good point on the subject last night in Acts 7, where quote-unquote Stephen, where he's about to be, when he's about to be stoned, how he explains the doctrines that were, and that we have been taught are part of the Torah, but which were actually in service of Moloch. And and that was amazing for my eyes to see that, because I never took notice of that before. But then it's like, oh,
that's what Solomon did.
Said, yep. And in the wilderness for those 40 years, how it says that, well, I didn't give you those sacrifices. Those sacrifices you thought you were doing unto me were unto him. And that was amazing to see that, because I never took notice of that before. But if we diligently seek, we can see these things.
I don't think that they sacrificed, though. I really don't. It was in the form of a question. Did you sacrifice to me all those 40 years? Yeah. And the manna was falling, so they weren't eating their sacrifices if they were sacrificing at all. The manna was still coming down those 40 years.
So and you ate the quail, you were no longer.
Right.
Numbers, you had the quail coming out your nose, and then you were gone.
Ezekiel 20.
Ezekiel 20. Numbers 11, the place of lusting. If I remember right.
Yeah,
Moses
flooded
the place. Killed. Yeah.
Flooded with those gifts that they wouldn't live by until they were pouring it out.
Yeah. I think it was an allowance that was made, as far as I can see. If it wasn't added in later on, it was definitely an allowance that was made for during the time, that hoping that people would wake up, that would understand. It's amazing what Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes and in Proverbs, and yet turn around, like we were talking about earlier, slaughtered all these animals. It just doesn't make any sense. We really need the Ruach Yehuah. We really need it. That's the only thing that can rightfully pull out his word of truth from the lying pen of the scribes, from the corruption of the sages and the scribes. I mean, Yusha himself warned us of that, and yet here's this Christian doctrine of men coming along and saying, oh, no, it's the word of God and it's infallible. How dare you question it? How dare you question Paul?
Yeah, they changed questioning Messiah.
They changed thou shalt not kill to thou shalt not murder.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard it the other way, too. I mean, really, what's the difference? I mean, when we have things that we can eat. We're not Noah. We're not Noahs. We don't need Noah's allowance. And when we read that, what it's referred to, extra biblical sources, which turns out it was just removed by the synagogue of Satan so that they could keep their tradition, so that for the most part, people wouldn't really question, wait a minute, why does it say this here in Jubilees? Why would Noah get off the ark? You know, the day that they get off the ark and then build an altar and start killing off the clean animals, start sacrificing them. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, we hear the excuses. Well, that's why Yah commanded them to bring 7 pairs of clean animals. You know, so he'd have some to sacrifice later. And we read about it and that he did it, and it like there in Jubilees, and And I think right after he does that, Yah again grieves in his heart. He says that it still grieves him that man would think to do these things in his mind. And then he corrects Noah. And then Noah makes a deal with his sons at that time not to do that ever again and not to have anything to do with blood. And then when Noah dies and his sons die, it says right there they go right back into killing and eating and drinking blood and meat and everything. As those things that were forgotten.
Yeah, it's amazing that he says he grieves in his heart because man's heart is perpetually evil right after he does the sacrifice. Literally right after that. Their heart's always evil.
But he's watching Noah, and he's shaking his head going, what in the world? And this is the one that I brought that crossed over on the flood. And this is the one that I'm using to carry on the next generations, to teach the next generations that separated and all the others that had life, the breath of life in them were destroyed during the flood. And I guess it should show us something too, how easily we can hear the wrong spirit, if you will. We need to be testing these spirits to see if they're really truly are from you. That's what we're saying at the beginning of the show today. We can't just make stuff up. Well, the rabbis said, well, the city just go here and let us know this and that. Okay, well, let's go with that. They're holy men, right? Who calls them holy? They do. They call themselves holy. They pat each other on the back. You're holy. Yeah, you too.
Apologize, Aaron. You were very, very garbled there. I couldn't make out anything you said.
Oh, same for me.
I'm sorry. It's the connection out of here. At least I have a connection in the sticks. I have to put my phone
and Alex,
back
that Wi-Fi is working good for you.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
Yeah, for the moment. Yeah, for the moment, but that's not going to be reliable as I'm constantly fighting to get any connection since there's a limited amount here. So who's to say if I'll have internet next time?
I know there's free Wi-Fi at McDonald's. I don't know how far you have McDonald's from you.
Not sure, to be honest. I could go consider checking that out, though.
Yeah, and I know some laundromats do, too, have a guest log in, and that's always something you could do. I'm not saying go do your laundry on the Sabbath, but...
Yeah, but I'll consider driving out there for that if it comes to it next time.
Yeah, I think that's great that you found that you can do the free Wi-Fi calling and join us. That's
great. Well, I'll find out if I have a big bill. If I have a big bill next week, I'll know that it didn't work.
Oh, man. Yeah, let us know. We'll pitch in on that. It should work. As long as you're using the Wi-Fi, you're not using any of your data then.
That's the idea. That's what hopefully is happening.
Yeah. That's what I'm doing right now is Wi-Fi calling. We don't have any cell towers out in this area here at all. We're completely surrounded by mountains, and nobody's put any towers up on the mountains around here.
Well, if it works for you, it should work for me. I just hope it doesn't use the cell in its place.
Me too. Like I said, let us know. We'll pitch in on it.
All right, well, I'll do that. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I don't want you to feel like you can't join us.
Neither do I.
No.
Anyhow, what any other big things that you've been studying this week?
Uh besides RVs and plumbing, no. I really haven't had much time this last week. Just trying to, I'm racing the weather down here. Have you?
Yeah, I just got a job at Canadian Tire in the auto department, so I've been having to learn all sorts of vehicle stuff.
Cool. That's great. That'll help you out in the long run.
Yeah, because I've never been a car person in my life, but now I'm forced to be.
So your Canadian Tire, it's an auto parts store and a tire store, huh?
You can call it a literally everything store other than food, perhaps, because it has basically everything there. But, yes, it has tires and an auto department, et cetera. I haven't seen a place with as much variety as Canadian Tire.
So it's got everything a Walmart does.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty similar to Walmart. I would say it has more variety than Walmart, except for the lacking food.
Oh.
I like it there, so that's good. I kind of suck right now, but I'm making progress, and if I don't get fired for incompetence, I will say that I kind of enjoy this work.
That's great. I'm happy for you. That's neat, and I hope they don't push any mandates on you.
Well, it says in the office that if you're not vaccinated, you have to wear a mask. But they also say that you're not allowed to ask customers about those things. So that's good so far.
It's catch 22, isn't it?
Yep. But yeah, no. This is one of the nicer places, I guess, because I went to an A&W and I grabbed my nice vegetarian burger. And then I'm about to leave. They never asked me anything. This old lady comes in and they demand she gives her vaccine passport. And I was in disbelief. It made me so angry, but I didn't even process it right away until I was about to leave, because it just stunned me. And then I'm like, wow, I'm never going there again. But the place next to them, also there's one bakery as well that said that they will never ask you to wear a mask or if you're vaccinated. And so I went straight to them and said, hey, I'm going to give you a tip and invest here, because after seeing what I saw in A&W, I want to invest in places like you guys.
Yeah. That's good. I'm glad you didn't go into the food industry, because that's, as we've seen, that's one of the hardest first areas to get hit hard when they start divvying out who is necessary and who isn't. You know? It's not always necessary to go get it.
It also heavily deals with meat and unclean meats, especially. So it's like I could never touch one of those food industries.
Right. I didn't know that A&W has veggie burgers now. That's cool.
Yeah, they're called Beyond Meat Burgers. They're extremely good, actually.
Yeah, you should probably look into what's in those, though, because it's pretty mass-produced, big company. I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose.
Kind of like mystery meat.
It gets so overwhelming so quick.
It's called Beyond Beef?
Yeah, it's called Beyond Meat. It's their vegetarian patty. It's actually been said to taste better than their meat patties. And from back when I did used to eat meat, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. It does make a better taste to your burger.
Well, it's funny because they did tests with like children and stuff to see, and they would not tell them which one was meat and which one was vegetarian. And they would ask them which one they prefer. And and on average, they would say they preferred the vegetarian patty. But then when they found out it was a vegetarian patty, they suddenly swapped to the meat patty. It's just that lust for meat.
I found the ingredients. Pea protein isolate expeller processed canola oil, refined coconut oil, water, yeast extract, maltodextrin, natural flavors, gum, exorbit. Let's see, it's gum, arabic, sunflower oil, salt. Let's see, non-GMO modified food starch. The page that I'm on that I got this from said after looking at the ingredients, they wouldn't need it. But I don't see what exorbitant acid. I don't see anything horrible in it. I don't
right.
see anything.
I didn't either.
I don't know what.
What made them draw the line?
What, I don't know. Let me see what they say. Oh, they don't like processed soy.
Right.
Fermented organic soy in small amounts is okay, is what they say, but the processed soy they don't like. I don't know. Didn't seem too bad.
No, it doesn't.
I don't know my ingredients well.
This study found that soy simulated the growth of estrogen-dependent tumors found in breast cancer. So that's the biggest problem is the soy protein in it.
Yeah, it's a synthetic estrogen. Soy is actually genetically modified from a long time ago.
So isn't tofu soy?
Yep, and but I like the fried tofu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been having a number of people, when I talk about not eating meat, they tell me, oh, well, you know, there's a bigger issue. Fast foods, processed foods, that's way worse. And I've always had to respond to them, look, I'm not going to dispute with you that processed food is bad because – I'm inclined to agree, but this isn't about my health. I'm not doing this because I'm concerned about health. I'm doing this for moral issues. I'd rather rely on supernatural protection than physical protection. I'm not refusing to eat meat because it's healthier. I'm doing it because it's wrong. It's just wrong to slaughter innocent animals. So that's why I'm doing it, and I'm trusting in the Most High to protect me. It's not about what's more healthy for me. It's about what is appropriate for eternity. And so I have to make clear the priorities here. My health is, I'm not saying that's not important, but that's a very back point to what really matters, and that what is morally right.
Good. I agree. Similar for me too. Yeah. Similar for me, too. I mean, I dabbled in vegan vegetarianism, but I'd still have a salmon or a turkey sandwich or something once a week. But for the most part, I thought I was pretty much, yeah, for spiritual. And back then, it was for health reasons. I was trying to be more healthy. And pretty soon, like I talked about before on other shows, we talked about y'all put it on my heart not to take the life of another sovereign individual, man or beast. Like Solomon says, when are you men going to realize that you too are beasts? It's definitely a spiritual thing for me as well. We don't need those.
Yeah.
We don't need that secondhand plant protein is what we're doing, but we're getting it from an animal that cannot filter out the things that are in the dirt like plants can, cannot filter out the hormones and all the injections that even the animals are given.
So because we have a garden, last year it was attracting rodents, and they made their way up into the ceiling above my son's bed and up the chimney up into our attic, because there's a chimney that was from a wood stove. My house was built in 1900, and there's a chimney inside of our house that isn't used. It goes from the other wall you know, from the wall, other side of the wall in the kitchen, all the way up to the attic, but it doesn't go through the roof anymore. And so they were finding their way up that chimney and into the attic in the ceiling above the first floor. And we got a, I cut a hole where I wanted to put a lamp anyway in the ceiling, and I got my camera that's connected to my phone, you know, a inspection camera that's on a long rod, and, you know, off Amazon. And we put the camera in the ceiling, and we could see that there was a tomato plant in the ceiling, that they had drug it up into the ceiling. And so I went to this store that sells everything across the other side of the river from us, and I bought a couple of live animal traps. Or no, I guess I got them off Amazon. Anyway, two small animal traps that just you put peanut butter on a stick and put it inside, and it traps them. So for 2 years, we've been keeping track of how many we catch, and that it's so cool that you look them right in the eyes when they're in the trap, and they're just grateful that they're not dead, you know, and you release them. I go up about a mile away, and I drive on a beach approach to where there's a forest in the sand dunes, and I let them loose there so they're away from houses. And we've trapped with our larger trap, we got a squirrel. We've done 10 mice. We're at 10 rats. And we've captured 6 birds because the birds go in there too, and we've released them.
Is it just this year?
No, that's 2 years.
Oh, 2 years.
We have a bird feeder that we watch out our living room window, and it's hanging off my garage. And I watch the rat scurry up my siding, sit on top of my security light, and try and jump over to the bird feeder. And so we bring the bird feeder in at night, and I put traps out there, and I get them underneath the bird feeder. We had this little small mouse, the last thing we caught, a little teeny tiny mouse. And we drive to this place where we release them, my son and I. We call it the rat relocation team. We take our dog with us, Jack Russell. And we pull into this area where, like, there's a camp where if somebody didn't want to pay for camping or if they're homeless or something, they're camping in there. And that's where we release them. And there was this old couple near this entrance road. And so I pulled in a ways. I don't like to have to pull all the way in there, but I did because they didn't want to see that we were releasing a rodent. And so we did it right in front of the car. My son releases the mouse, and it goes underneath the car. And I went, oh, no, we don't want to drive over it. So let's make sure it's not underneath the tires, and we did. And we got back in the car, and we like to take the dog to the beach after we do it. And as I was driving onto the beach, I told my son, yeah, we're okay. I hope he didn't jump underneath the car, you know, get up underneath it in the car. That would be horrible. And we pull over and we park. We let the dog out. We get out, and my son Dan gets in front of the car, and the mouse runs out. He's on the beach now. And he's running around like he's on the moon or something. He doesn't know what to do. And he's jumping and running and doing circles, little like doing burnouts in the sand. And then we went and got the bag that we keep the trap in, and we try to catch him. We're two of us are chasing this little mouse around. We want to release him back into the forest. And it's just hilarious. And eventually he starts running towards the grass, and my son gets him, and he's, you know, chase him towards the grass, and he winds up into the grass of the dunes, and he's on his way to the forest, so he's okay. It was hilarious, two of us chasing the little mouse.
It sounds like he went on seagull or seagull alert.
Oh, I know. Yeah, we have bald eagles, we have hawks.
Yeah,
we have all kinds of predators that you don't want to be out in the open in the sand. That's for sure.
That's what it sounds like he went into immediately. Predator maneuvers, you know.
Oh, evasive action. Oh, yeah, we have to watch out for the bald eagles with our little dog because the eagles will swoop down and take a dog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's right. When you say across the river, you mean Astoria.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like
and
that
we go
out there
when
you're
go
at.
Shopping, it's into, yeah, we go shopping, it's into Warrington. That's where all the auto parts stores are, and Walmart and Costco and Fred Meyer.
Yeah, I drove through there once here two years ago, going out to what's that big bay back in there where they have the big, huge Oyster Bay. Willapa Bay.
Willapa
Bay. Yeah. Yeah, my blood mother lives back there in South Bend. And we went and visited
oh, yeah,
her for
South
a while.
Bend.
And we went
yeah,
to that museum over there.
Yeah, and there's Raymond is right next to South Bend.
Is that where they have the museum there? That naval museum is awesome.
Oh, that's in Astoria.
The next time you go through there, I think it's whatever it is, you cross that bridge as you're still heading east, like you're going to go over to I-5 there. You cross that one little bridge, and then you're in the next town. I think you're right. It's Raymond or something like that. But there's you go through there a couple of blocks, and you can hang a left. There's this museum back there that is just – I'll have to send you some pictures. It's just this – it looks like this little tiny, nothing museum, but it's so packed. Their displays are excellent, the way they did it. They have all kinds of different eras of the Americas, you know, from – way back, very beginning, like Christopher Columbus type days of the sailors, what they wore. They even have the uniforms hanging up in there, a bunch of paintings and pictures and stuff, and different kinds of machines that they did, even logging, old logging machines.
It sounds like a Lewis and Clark museum.
Kind of, yeah. It's
there's a lot of Lewis and Clark stuff here. And what museum is that where the canoe was and all the different Cape Disappointment? Is Lewis and Clark. So
yeah,
could it be that one?
Yeah. No. I'll send you the pictures. I took a picture of the outside. It has a sign. I just can't remember. I think it said Willapa Bay something on it or museum.
Yeah, there's a museum in South Bend. There's one in Owako. That's Columbia Heritage Museum. Anyway, our little town, our beach here is where Lewis and Clark first came to the Pacific.
And that's
we have a place called Dismal Niche. It's where they wintered here. Dismal Niche and Cape Disappointment.
So they chewed on their boot tongues for a winter.
Raylene, did they chew on their boot tongues? No.
Oh, I don't think so. They didn't go down a Donner party, but it wasn't quite that bad.
They had dogs they ate.
Yeah.
And they got salmon from the Indians came in their canoes across the mouth of the Columbia. What's that, Ryan? The Chinook Indians, yeah. Long time ago when my kids were homeschooled. They're all adults now, but when they were homeschooled, they all studied Lewis and Clark. And there's a book from the perspective of the dog, I guess the one that didn't get eaten. And what's
that one?
What was the food that they carried, the tack or whatever? Pemmican, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
they
pemmican.
Ate pemmican. Yeah. Some kind of, it's fat and grains, isn't it? No?
Sun-dried, yeah.
Turkey, fat, and what? Jerky, fat. And berries, okay.
Yeah, they'd make it out of a lot of different things. When I remember, pemmican was from, they'd use the buffalo to tear the meat in shreds and sun-dry it. And, it was packed with berries and different seeds, too.
Better than starving.
Yeah. I almost think I'd starve. I don't think I'd kill an animal.
Yeah, not anymore, no.
I would rather do the same also.
Yeah, I think I'd rather starve.
Well, There's plenty to eat. We do foraging. We, or at least we study it.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of things to eat that are available. It, even in our driveway, there's stuff growing, and we find out, oh, all this stuff is in our foraging books. It's all in our driveway.
Just don't eat those
like pineapple weed.
That camp.
Lots of
weeds
are really good stuff.
Yeah, and they're also on the Mocking Weeds
good.
List. You'll see a lot of weeds, they call them weeds, that make the noxious weeds list for farmers and for people to spray. A lot of them are cures.
Yeah.
Natural cures. There's cures for cancer. There's a lot of different stuff. We're taking, my daughter and I now have been taking stinging nettle juice, which isn't something fun to walk through or grab nettles if you've ever walked through them. They're one of the things that they're always trying to spray around.
You got a thumbs up from my wife. She's a nurse, and she's the main forager. Oh, she's brought out her she brought out her eyedropper bottle full of it. Stinging nettle tincture. Yeah, she just showed me her bottle. But she's laughing.
Good stuff. My daughter's been taking it for.
I was going to say, Aaron wants to know what elderberry you had, the plants. Black? Is that all you know?
Perfect. That's the strongest one.
Yeah. I have the black elderberry, but I don't.
You have two kinds. And you have honeyberry and any other berry? Oh, you have blueberry.
Strawberry.
And strawberries. Yeah. She has two kinds of the black elderberry, but she can't remember which kind they are.
Oh,
one die. I don't know. Okay. We have elderberry that grows wild here in our area.
So yeah,
we think
do too.
That they can. We think it can pollinate with those ones, cross-pollinate with those ones. I'm not sure. But she was worried about them. You need two different kinds to get them to pollinate.
Hmm.
Yeah, she had one that died.
That's too bad. Yeah, it's nice to sit in the passenger seat when they're driving through North Idaho here. I get to see a lot that I miss normally when I'm driving. And the other day we were coming down from Sandpoint, which we call it San Diego Point now. And we don't call it Coeur d'Alene. We call it Cal d'Alene. But we're driving back down from Sandpoint, and I see all these elderberry trees. They're the size of trees up here, just loaded up. Yeah, and they were just ripe, just perfect. We pulled over and had a garbage sack full, got some, but we meant to go back with some 5-gallon buckets because they're so nice. You can just hold a 5-gallon bucket underneath it and just clip the whole bunch off at once. We found that it was best to put them in the freezer immediately. You know, when you get back, freeze them, and then the berries come right off the stems real easy. It's the stems that you don't want to have that little bit of poison in there that'll. It'll make you really gassy and give you a good stomach ache. I don't think they'll
good
kill you.
Ache.
I haven't heard anybody dying from them. But, yeah, you'll get a good stomach ache and lots of gas. That elderberry is awesome stuff. And I was just reading here a couple of weeks ago that if you take zinc along with the elderberry, it helps the zinc absorb a lot faster. It assimilates it into our system a lot faster than just zinc by itself. Same with a good glass of grape, real non-GMO grape juice. And put a squirt of that stinging nettle juice in there with it, and you won't even taste it. But that stinging nettle juice, there's something to be said about it, too, as far as asthma and clearing out your lungs. And allergies, it works great for allergies, even pet. My daughter is allergic to cats like I am, and we have a new cat that came crawling out of the forest, an orange tabby. And my daughter's just always wanted an orange tabby. Well, she got her wish and been taking this. And she grabs onto him and swells up. Their eyes get all red and puffy, and she keeps sneezing like crazy. Keeps loving on him, though. And
you build up an immunity.
Yeah, they say it takes about a year to build up an immunity to one cat, to get used to one cat. But she's been taking it for 2 months, and no more allergy, no more reaction anyway to the cat. That's amazing stuff. I thought it would take a few more months than that, but it's a great immune booster.
We're all allergic to cats, and we have three cats.
Yeah. I'm surprised you have mouse problems or mouse and rat problems. Usually when they smell that you have a cat in the area.
No, our cats are just in the house only.
Oh.
And it was just last year that they were in the house. What we did was we put Grandpa Gus, peppermint, right? And cinnamon. It's peppermint and cinnamon, and you spray a little bag. What's in the bag? Wood chips in a bag, and you spray it, and then you can throw it. We threw it into the attic, and we threw them down the chimney. And so once that smell was in the house, they no longer came in. And we did it underneath the house. She says it messes up their neurological function, so they stay away from it.
Yeah. I've heard that about.
Yeah,
that.
No. You have a garden, or if you have chickens, we don't have chickens, but we have a garden and the bird feeder. It all attracts them, and they'd be out there anyway. You just wouldn't even know it if you didn't trap them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're doing a service for all the neighbors so that we keep the population moved to the forest instead of being around the houses.
Irish Spring is supposed to work too. The Irish Spring soap.
I heard that works for deer too.
Doesn't that work for deer too?
I think so.
Somebody told me you keep the clippings from the barber shop. They don't like human hair, and that kind of keeps the deer away. But I guess it just depends on how hungry you are.
Even Irish Spring would probably be more pleasant to deal with.
Yeah.
I have it in the shed.
You have Irish Spring in the shed?
I put it in the car.
Oh, okay. My wife uses Irish Spring, too. She hasn't mentioned it. She says it's in the shed and it's in the garden.
Try anything, it works. I've tried those little frequency machines that you plug in. They're supposed to, real high frequency, that's supposed to repel the little rodents. But
there's
when they're hungry
enough,
they get used to it.
There's a guy who has rat and mice and mole traps that we used to watch the channel. Don't watch it anymore because it kills the rodents. But it's Sean Woods, and he tests all kinds of things like that. And the sonic stuff, it didn't work. And he tested the Grandpa Gus, and that's how we heard about it.
Hmm.
He does live traps, but he does a lot of traps that kill the animals, so we don't watch it anymore.
Yeah, I cried over a sticky trap one day. I had to put him out of his misery. Poor little guy. I don't like killing the mice, but yeah, they do come in. We haven't had that problem since we have Stanley now. That's what Lindsay named him.
Yeah, I don't think they come in the house. There's three cats around.
No, and he's quite the mouser. I think he was raised by squirrels. When he came out of the woods by himself, he was like 5 months old maybe, and he was a little skinny, but he's quite the forager, and he runs across the trees from branch to branch like a squirrel. My friend that has cats, and she's had cats her whole life and rescue cats and everything, she's just jaw-dropped over it. She's like, I've never seen a cat do that in my whole life. She's about 70 years old. She's like, she must have been raised by squirrels. He's fun to watch. You know, he gets birds, and I'll catch him out laying outside in the grass on his back, throwing mice up in the air. I'm just having a good time. Did we lose Rachel and Christy?
I've been wondering for a while.
I haven't heard anything. I know she was texting me earlier before the show started. She gave me about a 10-minute warning. She's like, can you do the show today? I'm like, I just figured out the password to the Wi-Fi. I don't have anything connected. I haven't even connected my computer yet. I just have my phone and like my smart TV. I was watching some stuff from a channel this morning. Our friend Morris has a channel on YouTube called Torah for Today. And I was just watching his latest video that he put out. He's definitely on his own walk, and he's seeking truth. That's I give him that much. I really hope he continues to do that.
Yeah, I was in a couple groups with him that neither of us are part of anymore. But yeah, he had a lot of interesting information. I wouldn't say I agreed with him on a lot of it, but some of it was pretty good stuff, and especially his mind.
Yeah.
At least he had a lot of information.
Yeah. Yeah, we do agree heavily when it comes to Paul. I think Morris and I, we agree 100% on Paul there. But as far as other things, that were meant to be from the beginning, and the way that things will return like they were meant to be from the beginning, as Messiah makes it perfectly clear. It does to me anyway. I mean, maybe that's the Father's Spirit, right? Abba's Spirit right along there with it, you know, proofing it. As I said, like as far as marriage between a man and a woman, there's no polygamy in there. Those two come together and become one. He doesn't say three or four or five or six come together and become one. It kind of sums up the whole thing, doctrine of polygamy. I don't care what the patriarchs did. I don't care what Abraham did and those guys. We see a lot of the mistakes that they did and that they're forgiven of and overlooked and allowances that were made for people that do come in with multiple wives. But Messiah himself, our master, our only master, our only rabbi, if you will, that we should be paying attention to and hanging on his every word, said it was between one man and one woman, and divorce was never a thing, you know, from the very beginning. And just like everything else, things are going to return back to where they were when Yah created it and said it was good. Things are going to return back to good, not this chaos and corruption and thorns and thistles growing up amongst, you know, the good, healthy things to eat. And things are going to return the way they were meant to be from the very beginning before they're corrupted. And that's not just marriage, but that's also our diet. And you know, Morris and I just don't, he just doesn't see that. We don't agree on those areas. He hasn't seen the corruption yet. He's surprised to hear, okay, you see that the enemy, the devil wrote half of our New Testament. Have you seen that he's not doing anything new here? He did that in the Old Testament as well, the Law and the Prophets. He's had his henchmen working and pressing into it. He's not seeing it. Just doesn't see it. And I'm hoping that he does. He just thinks that I'm using things like Jeremiah 8:8, you know, who are we to say that the word of Yahuwah is with us when the lying pen of the scribe has corrupted it? He thinks I'm out of context, or Jeremiah was out of context, or whatever. And how about Yahushua when he says, hey, and it's a commandment. It isn't a suggestion. Yahushua doesn't give any suggestions. They're all commandments. And he says, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. And as we're seeing and we're noticing that anybody who quotes and promotes Paul, they're actually breaking Messiah's commandments. And it's a hard thing for me to say to somebody, but it's almost like you gotta jerk them out of their stupor or something. It's like a little bit of shock therapy or something. Even if it causes them to walk away from you or badmouth you, it's like, come on here, snap out of it. Messiah said, if you love me, you keep my commandments. And I just showed you where Paul's not keeping his commandment, this specific one. And you're not either because of Paul. Who is your master? Who is your Messiah? And you must not love him. And that really bothers him, as it should. It should bother all of us when we realize that, wow, I've just been giving him lip service this whole time. I'm just like a Paul, you know. I say I do this and that, and I believe I should be doing this. And in Jesus' name, you know, you can't forget that little contemporary Christian stamp right after every comment that you make. And in Jesus' name, of course, you know, as though that helps. I think those are the people that are going to be in some serious trouble there. I mean, that's using his name in vain, is it not?
Yep, exactly. They say, oh, in Jesus' name, and then they don't quote him. They quote Saul.
They quote Paul. Yeah, exactly. They call the wicked one that was prophesied to come on the heels of the Messiah. And even in his warnings, first of all, let no man deceive you. Oops. Oops. I think that's one of the greatest deceptions that there is, right there in our faces.
It's a real shame.
And I really believe he's the Antichrist. And I think there's going to be a time when the Father withdraws his spirit. And those that are clinging onto Paul will remain unclean.
Yeah, it's really adding up now. There seems to be so much missing from our history, so many details. Just going by the scriptures, they're saying, like the fact that he told his apostles that they some would live to see him come and reign on earth, like things like this. We're not seeing any record of these things in history, but there's a list of. There are actually a multiple of writings about a lot of these, a lot of things that are not made public, or there might be made public, but they're very hidden in the public eye. So how much do we actually know about history? How much has been hidden from us is like, it's a question that's really hard to answer.
Yeah. I think they've tried to do everything. But like a Job, yeah, we have to remember we're like a Job in the same predicament that Job was in. Our enemy does have free reign to do whatever he can to fool us, kill us, do whatever to cause us to stray from the truth, and yet the truth still has to be out there. That's part of the deal. We have to have that choice. And we have to dig. There's Elon Musk. Here's something. Take a look at his parents. Look what his dad did. Elon Musk and his family traveled his whole life while he was growing up, and his parents were going around and searching for lost cities, like in Africa, places that were overgrown, and they were and a lot of these lost cities, even the ones that seem to be melting, I'm sure if you've looked at some of that stuff yet, it's like they knew they were there. They knew that that's where the gold was, in these places that were melted, to go and dig there to get these. It's really strange. I mean, it's neat when you look at it, but it's like they knew what was going on and they've been hiding it from us. There's definitely... a faction out there that, whether it's the Freemasons, the hidden hand or whatever of the Jesuit order, or just what, you know, it seems that our enemy is big and strong, and they've been doing this for a long time, hiding our history from us, looking at the orphan trains, and where did all these kids come from? Where are their parents? John Levy, have you ever watched his channel at all?
Yeah, I've heard of him.
I watch him.
Yeah, he's interesting. I mean, he just brings up some cool stuff. He had one last week where a video that he found, And he says that this guy must have a group of people because the stuff that this guy was zooming in on Google, using Google Earth that hadn't been blurred out yet by whoever's doing the Google Earth and going.
I watched
through.
That one.
Yeah, it was not a good one. Really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And the one he just, I haven't looked at it lately, but the last one I just watched of his, it came out a couple of days ago. He was talking about bricks and brick factories. And before the brick factories were made, how many bricks could be made in a day versus once the factories were made. And he was showing a one of these repurposed star forts, as we know them, or in the Florida Keys, that was as big as the island that it's built on. It covers the whole footprint of the island, 16 million bricks. And when this fort was made, supposedly, it was made 12 years before the first brick factory was made. And there's 16 million bricks in that fort. To give you an idea, there's only 10 million bricks in the tall building there in New York before the World Trade Centers. There's only 10
Empire
million.
Empire State Building?
Empire State Building. Thank you. I'm so glad it's the Sabbath. I haven't slept so good this last week. Moving sucks.
You don't need to shut up when I'm doing a show. Stop talking.
Yeah. Yeah, Olivia.
Whoopsie.
Excuse me, miss. Can you mute yourself? There she is. We thought we'd lost you.
Bye. She was trying to find the radio show panel. And I was telling her to press the back arrow to go back.
I had my mom and my daughter both.
Well,
welcome,
Shabbat
Shalom. I think it's Debbie. Are you on
yes,
with us, Debbie?
Shabbat Shalom, everybody.
Shabbat Shalom, Debbie.
Shabbat Shalom.
Yeah, I've been on for a while listening to you guys talk about all these interesting things.
Yeah, I have to when there are certain things I can't do on my phone, and as the host, I have to hang up on my cell phone and quickly get a landline in. I can't do it at the same time, but I can't let too much time pass, so I was like having a heart attack going from my cell phone to my landline there for a second, and I had people trying to help me out ironically at the same time when I was like trying to do all that. So sorry about that. I just was trying to get Debbie where you could come out and talk and where I didn't lose the show. So we're all here.
And Chris is still with us?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a thought, or a question, if anything, on those 16 million bricks and just the amount of buildings that have gone up with those red bricks and what those red bricks are made of. And where do you find that kind of clay, red clay? And then I was thinking about what Aaron or who was saying that earlier about the blood coming to the bridal's mouth or just being entrenched in blood. Would that have anything to do with the red clay? That it was just a passing thought, but I'm wondering.
Mm-hmm. Could be. There was something about that too. They were trying to figure out what caused the Nile to turn red. If it wasn't blood, what could it have been? And there was something regards to a flooding of a red clay into the Nile River, but it just didn't work. It just didn't. I mean, when they tried to reproduce that in a by putting it into it, to actually making it work, their hypothesis, and actually making it, trying to get it to mix that way, it just didn't. What didn't look like blood is what I'm trying to say. But yeah, that's interesting on the bricks. I believe it was the red ones too. That once they're heated to a certain temperature, they turn yellow. They turn that creamy yellow. And that was something that somebody brought out about the fervent heat of that in Revelation. They were talking about the melting in from fervent heat.
Uh-huh.
I still think it's strange that some areas would get hit so hard, you know, where they're just melted, where they just look like mountains of melted molten magma, and other places only look like half of them melted.
Right.
And why some other places, you know, just had a little bit of mud flood or whatever silt built up around them, and where other places aren't even touched at all. Just like the Chicago World's Fair, those buildings there.
It begs the question, what would have caused them to melt like that, right? And if we go to the scriptures where, you know, the earth will melt fervent heat, well, the works,
mm-hmm.
could that have already happened? I think Alex was bringing that up earlier of whether the millennial rain had already happened. And that's part of the destruction that would have been caused by Yahuwah melting some of the works with fervent heat. Because you'd have to wonder, why would those things be burned up like that? But then you look at things like the Chicago Fair and all the other fairs that burned down by fire but didn't have that melting evidence as we see some of the mountains that are melted like wax. I can't hear you. I think it's muffled.
Sorry. I got to remember where I put my phone here. I have to stand with one leg up in the air.
Well, I found out that the red bricks are red because of iron oxide.
Yeah.
In the dirt?
Yeah.
Well, it's a powder, iron oxide. Yeah, it's a powder from the iron. Used in thermite, too.
Yep, they mix clay and quartz sand, gypsum, lime, cement, water, aluminum powder is what red bricks are made of. The bricks at the Ishtar Gate had lapis lazuli in them, and to turn them blue. Like the bricks that were made in the first... The bricks that were made in the furnace that the Daniel's friends were in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to have to drop you guys. I got a friend who wants to hang out.
Good to have you with us, Stephen. Thank you for joining us. I'll get in touch with you this week.
Okay. Yeah, everybody should, if you haven't already, join the Discord. It's a lot of fun. I think Alex can tell you how much, and Debbie too, how much fun we had chatting. And if you got suggestions, just post them in there or message me in there. And it should be a lot of fun. Maybe we could do a once a week thing like a Friday night abide.
Cool. Can you tell everybody how to get there?
So in both of the Facebook message groups, I posted links, and let's see, if you want to find me, I'm Stephen Simpson on in Long Beach, Washington on Facebook. I'll send you a link.
Perfect. Thank
you.
What is your profile?
And then any of us. I've got a beard and a hat on, I think, and glasses.
Right. Perfect. Thank
you. It's an old picture. My beard and my hair are longer now. All right, guys. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Thank you so much for joining us and being a big part
of
the conversation today.
All right. We'll see you guys.
So how have you been, Debbie and Rachel?
Doing well, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Doing pretty well, thank you.
Good to hear. Have you guys had anything interesting this week?
Well, I was trying to find earlier, and I didn't come out and interject because I could not locate it, but maybe one of y'all know the reference, and you may even know the verse, but I used to be very adept at the verse or the chapter in the verse, and I can't remember. I think it's 1st or 2nd Kings. May also be in 1st or 2nd Chronicles because they kind of coincide, where it talks about Sennacherib, but one of those chapters, and I think for some reason a 17 and a 19 and a 38 and a 40 chapters, those chapters stick in my mind, but I tried to find it. But it talks about basically where the what was supposed to be the children of Israel, where they looked upon an idol. They looked to the idol for healing rather than to the Father. And so earlier when we were talking about vaccines and the person's excuse that the children of Israel looked upon the snake for healing, those verses always really bothered me until I found in the chapter that I cannot find the reference where it's basically the same thing that's happening, and now we have the entire Christian community doing the same thing, looking upon the Messiah on the cross for healing, and everything that we have come to know and understand is wrong with the Christian faith and how it has stolen or turned the truth of the Father on its ear and directed the attention elsewhere. It almost appears to me that what happened in the desert with looking upon the snakes for healing is a symbolism, if you will, of the switcheroo, and the people wanted something else to heal them, and so it's a false healing, but it's kind of like, here you go, you wanted an imposter, you wanted an idol, here you go, here's your idol, this is your heart, so have at it, type of a thing. And it's not fully developed in my understanding, but it's just, I don't know if anybody has seen anything there or not, but does anybody know what I'm talking about, where the children looked upon something, and they looked to the thing to heal them instead of the Father that was giving them the thing in 1st or 2nd Kings or 1st or 2nd Chronicles? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? I couldn't find it. It's in the very beginning of one of the chapters.
I do not recall it, but it always has seemed a little bit weird about it being a snake on a pole that healed them.
Yeah, and that's where the medical field got their symbolism, you know? You know that,
Since
right?
Since when has the medical field ever followed him?
Right, exactly. So it seems to be like the imposter, the thing that, since you weren't willing to follow him, what you were given instead, you know, the hocus pocus sorcery.
Are
I mean,
sure
ambulances
there,
use that. The CDC uses it. I mean, doctors, veterinarians use it. It's the snake on the pole. They all use it.
Are you absolutely sure that it comes from that, though? Because I have a hard time believing that anyone would have, that these pagan nations would have used the scriptures to decide what they were going to do or use their symbol.
Why is that?
Well, since the pagan nations don't follow the scriptures, why would they make their symbol from the Bible?
As we know, much of the scripture is pagan, as we've come to understand.
Yes, so that would only make sense.
Has the leaven's been mixed
pagan.
In?
It makes sense if this is pagan. If the snake on the pole post is actually a pagan thing, which I am inclined, it makes sense. Then that would make sense.
Is Aaron still on?
I was, guess not. Huh. I don't recall him saying that he was leaving.
He said he's muted, so let me fix that.
Okay.
How'd you get muted? Did I accidentally mute you when I unmuted Debbie? Sorry about that.
It's all right. I was listening to Steve, and all of a sudden my phone just hung up out of the blue. Probably some way around.
How rude of your phone.
I know. So I called back, and I was just muted. I pushed number one. I was just waiting for you.
Okay, I see. So I figured you probably have something to add to that.
I'm kind of in the same boat. Ooh, I mean, it seems like we all are right now trying to figure out, you know, exactly is that for real? Was that the way it was recorded? Was it really supposed to be that way? I just did a whole King James search here real quick. Just typed in serpent and serpents. It first shows up in Numbers 21, verses 6 and 7. And Yahuwah sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. Therefore, the people came to Moses and said, "We have sinned, for we have spoken against Yahuwah and against thee. Pray unto Yahuwah that he take away the serpents from us." And Moses prayed for the people, and Yahuwah said to Moses, "Make thee a fiery serpent, and set it upon a pole. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live." And Moses made a serpent of brass, and put it on a pole. And it came to pass that if a serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived. Yeah, it's like you're saying, Rachel, was it added? Was it a hocus-pocus thing? It just doesn't... it's also mentioned, too, I believe it's what everybody's... the world's most known verse in the New Testament, John 3:16. "For Yah so loved the world that he sent his son." Well, what's it say in John 3:15? Let me go to it here. 3:15. Oh, sorry, 14. "And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have eternal life."
See?
Hmm. Yeah.
Also, I was just, since I brought up what Stefan and I were talking about last night, or Stephen, about in Acts 7, Stefan in the Bible said that that basically the Most High gave him over to worship Moloch when they were in the wilderness. He says that all
right.
the things they did, they didn't do unto me, they did unto Moloch, which makes me wonder if this is the same thing here, where he's like, yeah, no, I'll give you over to Moloch. You can you can go and be saved by Moloch here instead of me. It makes sense.
They repurposed, rebuilt the temple of Moloch, and they used the star of Kiyun, which is, they refer to it as the Star of David. That is a very satanic symbol. And I don't know about you, but it really bothers me when I see believers that have that on their profile or throw that symbol around, calling it. I do. It has nothing to do with symbolism.
I'm missing something. What symbolism are you talking about, Aaron?
The Star of Kiyun.
Oh, yeah, the Star. Yeah, the Star of Remphan.
Yeah, Kiyun and Remphan. Yeah, called the other. Yeah.
I guess
it depends on your dialect.
Yeah, and who with. But I wanted to go back a little bit on the verse that you were quoting with Moses saying, Numbers 21, verse 8, where Moses took a fiery serpent and put it on a pole. The fiery serpent, if you look at the Hebrew etymology, it's not a serpent. It's not an akash. It is a seraph, like a seraphim. So
yeah,
it's and they've the medical industry has taken it and twisted it, putting on their staff or on their pole the nakash, the serpent, as opposed to the fiery seraph, which is a seraphim. And seraphim are discussed in scriptures as, you know, the six-winged seraphim that covers
right.
the mercy seat.
They're the only ones that I know of that have wings. But yet we see all the other angels personified.
Yeah,
I believe the seraphim are the only ones that actually named with and described as having wings. Used to make a fly with
right.
their middle pair. It's that serpent there in Numbers is H8314, and the Strong's number.
Yes.
It says it's from 8313. Same thing. It's this is how the Strong's have it.
Right.
To be positively set on fire to make or burn up.
You're kind of breaking off, Aaron.
Oh, I'm sorry. I keep forgetting about that.
That's okay. I'm just thinking that the fiery serpent, I mean, when we read this fiery serpent, you know, we're thinking, you know, this snake on fire, if you would. But the fiery in terms of just this magnificent lighting, kind of like the fiery seraphs that had the swords of flame in the garden. That's what I'm envisioning. I'm not envisioning a snake on fire.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. It supposedly had wings.
Right.
They took the wings away and said, now you're going to crawl on the dust of the earth. You're going to crawl on your belly and eat dust, eat dirt the rest
no,
of your
but
life.
Not- Yeah, but not that. It's when Adam and Eve were booted, if you would, out of the garden, Yahuwah put a fiery seraphim to guard the entrance to the garden with a fiery sword, right? Am I
sword, yep.
Yeah. And that's what I'm envisioning with the pole in the desert would make a fiery serpent. It may have been originally made out of brass, if anything, maybe the lighting of it, or but it was supposed to maybe, this is my own personal thoughts, envisioning the, you know, the power of Yahuwah, which was the same way with the seraph in the garden that was blocking the way to the tree of life. I could be wrong, but that's how I'm seeing it. I'm not seeing it as a, you know, what is being interpreted, what medical establishment has done.
You might find this interesting. In verse 7 there of Numbers 21, chapter 21, and verse 7, towards the end of it there, it says Yahuwah, it says he prayed to Yahuwah that he take away the serpents. Now that in verse 7, take away the serpents from us, that word serpents right there, plural, actually says nahas.
Yeah.
H5175, yeah, and that is actually a snake there.
Right.
It does say, and it's from the word or whatever that's used there. Kind of sounds like a hiss from a snake too when it's spoken, supposed to.
Right.
It's from also 5172, primitive root to hiss,
right.
Whisper, magic spell even says that.
Right. Did you know that
divine enchanter?
The divine enchanter. Did you know the Yahuwah hisses?
Refresh my memory.
It does say that.
There is a verse in the Tanakh that talks about that Yahuwah shall hiss. It's in Isaiah 7:18. And it says, and it shall come to pass that in that day Yahuwah shall hiss for the fly that is in the uttermost part of the rivers of Egypt and for the bee that is in the land of Assyria. But Yahuwah doesn't hiss, and he certainly doesn't hiss for flies, because in my mind, who is the Lord of the flies?
Beelzebub.
Right. So, wow.
This also... My concordance here also says to whistle. It could be, for an example, to whistle or hiss.
Yeah, right.
As a call or in a scorn.
Really, do we see Yahuwah whistling?
No.
I don't see Yahuwah whistling. He will call. He will send his messenger to do the call. He will sound the trumpet, his voice like many waters. But I don't see him hissing or whistling. And every time I hear the word whistling, I can't help but think whistling Dixie.
Like a Pied Piper.
Yeah. And
I just realized
and
that Sennacherib is kind of a type of Paul here. 2 Kings 19. When King Hezekiah heard this, he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and went into the temple of the Lord. Verse 2, he sent Eliakim, the palace administrator, Shebna, the secretary and the leading priests of wearing sackcloth, to the prophet Isaiah, son of Amoz. Verse 3, this is chapter 19 of 2 Kings. They told him, this is what Hezekiah says, this day is a day on distress and rebuke and disgrace, as when children come to the moment of birth, and there is no strength to deliver them. Verse 4, it may be that Yahuwah will hear all the words of the field commander whom his master, the king of Assyria, has sent to ridicule the living Yahuwah, and that he will rebuke him for the words of Yahuwah, your Elohim, has heard. Therefore, pray for the remnant that still survives. When King Hezekiah's officials came to Isaiah, Isaiah said to them, tell your master, this is what the this is what Yahuwah says. Do not be afraid of what you have heard, those words which the underlings of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me. listen, when he hears a certain report, I will make him want to return to his own country, and there I will have him cut down with the sword. When the field commander heard that the king of Assyria had left Lachish, Lachish, I guess, he withdrew and found the king fighting against Libna. Now Sennacherib received a report that Tirkah, the king of Cush, was marching out to fight against him. So he again sent messengers to Hezekiah with the word, "Say to Hezekiah, king of Judah, do not let the God you depend on deceive you when he says, Jerusalem will not be given into the hands of the king of Assyria." See, right here he's making the people doubt the Father in heaven. "Surely you have heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all the countries, destroying them completely. And will you be delivered? Did the gods of the nations that were destroyed by my predecessors deliver them? The god of Gozan, Haran, Rezpah, and the people of Eden who were in Tel Assar? Where is the king of Hamath or the king of Arpad? Where are the kings of Lair, Sepharvaim, Hena, and Iva?" So, and then it just goes on and shows Hezekiah's prayer in verse 14. But it was just occurring to me as I was reading that, basically by Paul putting down the Father in heaven and his ways and the law, the commandments, and saying that they're done away with, he's putting into the minds of the people that that Father in heaven will not deliver them and that there's a new way to be delivered. And interestingly enough, to look upon the pole, which he changed to a cross, as you pointed out earlier, that it was even mentioned in John 3:15 in the analogy made back to that. I don't know. There's something there to possibly look into.
Yeah. I don't know the answer about it, but it wouldn't be the first time things have been changed.
What do you mean?
Oh, if in fact, if the part of the serpent was changed, and I'm not saying whether it is or not, as you mentioned, the wings could be something different, all this conversation, I don't know the answer, but it wouldn't be the first, and it hardly surprises me to believe that something would have been changed nowadays.
The Baphomet, the statue of Baphomet, or the that came to mind when you were talking about the pole and the serpent. There is the pole is on the Baphomet, and it's coming out of
sure
his crotch.
Yeah,
but it has two serpents
wrapped
around it.
Forgot about that. It's got this serpent on it too, the intertwining snakes with the wings at the top, which is also on the Mercury symbol. Which is what they refer Paul as. They refer to Paul as that. He's that symbol, you know, like the FT, what was it, FDS, or messenger that used to deliver flowers, and they had the little shoes with the wings on them, and it was all symbolic of
Mercury,
which is what they referred to Paul as. I forgot about all that.
Greeks, that's the Roman name for Hermes, God Hermes, which is, I don't see it as a play on words, but you know how Christianity has a way of studying scriptures, and it's called hermeneutics, which is a formula for rightfully dividing the word of truth that they use. And it's called
paganism.
What was that?
through paganism.
Yeah.
Just based off the term there, it sounds like they're trying to divide it based off of Hermes. So
and he was
already on the wrong
foot. He was a Greek deity that caused a lot of mischief. Almost sounds like a Loki in a way, you know, the Norse god Loki. Hermes, if I remember right, he stole Apollo's cattle and hid them from him. He did a lot of stuff like that. He was always causing mischief.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't want his name on any of my discernment.
No.
Any other good things to talk about?
Well, I think it's interesting. You can really get pretty deep into the study of Sennacherib and the actual way that Hezekiah, in the end, even after his life was saved, he let the enemy into his home and know where his gold was. And it was the strangest thing because I was actually studying with a Pauline who does the show on Sundays. At the time, he was showing me about Sennacherib and turn it down. He was showing me about Sennacherib, and when I read the verses on how he had let the enemy in, and it talks about even the door knockers, he showed the, it talks about he, and we know that it was the enemy. I believe it was the king of Assyria. I believe it was Sennacherib himself. Just a moment.
I like Olivia. She's great.
What's that?
I said I like Olivia. She's great.
Oh, thank you. So she's just listening to something at the same time, and my ADD brain can't turn the background noise off. So it's distracting me to try and get my thoughts out. So,
gotcha. We don't hear
I don't
it
remember
on this
where this is. Again, it's in these same chapters. If you look at Sennacherib and just read everything where Sennacherib is referred to, it's in one of those. But Hezekiah's life is saved, and this happens after his life is saved. So he's a chosen one. I feel like that's even part of the analogy that's being put right there before us in the scripture. But he allows the enemy to see his gold, and even he shows him the door knocker, which I am the way, the truth, and the life. But he's allowing the enemy to come into his home and know where his treasure is. And I think it's an analogy on that Paul will divide the spoil. He will come in and divide the spoil. And when I read that, that was part of, I remember I got so super excited, and I was like, do you see what happened here, Carl? Do you see what happened here? This is a prophecy. This is an analogy within a prophecy, within an analogy right there in the scripture of what will happen to the Christian church and how they will embrace paganism. It's right here. Do you see that? We let the enemy in, and we mixed our treasure with that, with theirs. And he was like, yeah. I mean, he saw it, but he didn't see it, you know? And I don't think I truly completely saw it at that time either, because I did not understand. I didn't understand at that time what Paul had actually done. But I thought, well, you know, maybe it is a more serious thing, what we've done with doing away with the feast days and allowing the Christmas and the Halloween and the Easter. And it was just like a kind of like my, on a pathway of hiking, if you could think of yourself on a hiking path, and one way leads to your narrow road destination, it was kind of like seeing a very small sign saying go this way instead that had kind of grown over and stuff, and people bypassing it and they weren't noticing it, and it was just clear as day to me. But anyway, I don't know if you guys see things like that when you read, but a lot of times the Father will show me prophecy through analogy. It's like his word and his voice are written within the stories themselves.
But, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, I believe you were quoting Habakkuk 2, verse 5 and 6 there, right, when you talked about him dividing the spoils? I think so.
Oh, that was
anyhow.
Genesis 49.
Yeah, that was
Genesis
49.
Okay. It says 20. Almost the same thing in Habakkuk 2, verse 5 and 6.
Yeah, it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's prophesied in several places.
Yeah, because that was it's the same thing, I guess, prophesied multiple times. And that was just so big when I saw that. I was like, oh my goodness, this is a direct prophecy about Saul. It even gives his name. It literally says Saul, and he will gather all nations. And I think it says something about dividing the spoils in there as well. And it was just such a big prophecy about the last days in the Christian church, as also in Genesis. And it just amazed me, since once you know what to look for, it's so clear, but I never would have I never understood it when I read it in the past.
I like the way Christy was doing it. Each time she sees the word Sheol, she reads it in as death or Paul.
Exactly.
Paul, Saul, and it is. And it works out great when it gives that almost the definition of the meaning, where they say they've made a covenant with death.
Yep, they made a covenant with Saul. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. And they like it. That's the willful part. That's the scary part.
Really?
So much that they defend it.
Yep. And defend it against all context that's given in the scriptures and against every twisting he does.
I actually think I found the reference, and forgive the translation, but 2 Kings chapter 18, verse 13, in the 14th year of Hezekiah's reign, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, attacked and captured all the fortified cities of Judah. 14, so Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent word to the king of Assyria of Lachish, saying, I have done wrong, withdraw from me, and I will pay whatever you demand from me. And the king of Assyria exacted from Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. Verse 15, Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the house of Yahuwah, and in the treasures of the royal palace. Verse 16, at that time Hezekiah stripped the gold with which he had plated the doors and doorposts of the temple of the Father in heaven, and he gave it to the king of Assyria. That's a marriage of the true path and paganism right there. It's a picture of it. And I think even the gold on the door is a symbol of using the Messiah as a new message by the enemy, the use of the true door to then be made into a false image and married with paganism. It's just crazy what happened. And it's hard to wrap your mind around or explain, but I hope I'm not the only one that can see what's going on there. I just find it very enriching when you can see that prophetic word in the symbolism there.
So where is this you're looking at exactly in the Bible?
2 Kings chapter 18.
2 Kings 18. I'll need to read through that myself here to see it myself here.
18. It says, Hezekiah gave all the gold and silver to the king of Assyria in exchange to stay as the ruler of Judah. So he is basically acknowledging the king of Assyria, Sennacherib, as the one in authority over him. So he made a covenant. Even after the father had saved his life. Not good. Not good.
I'm just reading through it right now.
Oh. Yeah, I am too. I was just reading about the Fuller's Field here.
Have you guys ever heard the term of getting sennacherib?
No.
Like, as in deceived or tricked?
No, but that's a good one.
Well, it seems like it's an old Southern one that I had heard, and I had never really known where it came from, and I'm wondering if it came from Sennacherib.
Yeah.
You know, he seems to have been somewhat of a trickster, like the whole Pauline gang, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Yes.
But you
I wish I could find where it is where the children of Israel look to the whatever it is, the idol that they look to, rather than the Father in heaven. It seems like human nature seems to want to do that. It's almost like then their onus and responsibility of having a genuine relationship with the Father is removed, and their guilt in not having that genuine relationship is removed, because they've been perhaps even willingly so deceived into thinking that whatever the illusion is that's put in its place is satisfactory. And that's where you come into play with, depart from me, I never knew you, you workers of iniquity. You may have allowed yourself to be deceived that you would look upon this whatever it is idol that you put in place of me, be it the Bible itself, mixed,
Paul,
you know, with all the leaven, all of the words that didn't come from him, that we know for a fact did not come from the Father, it seems to create that situation.
It does kind of fall into the serpent in the wilderness. The serpent in the wilderness falls into the category of mystery.
And there you have that wilderness again. So, Aaron, if you feel so inclined, can you speak to who you feel the Messiah is versus how the Pauline Christianity put him in the position to be worshipped as a deity, and that the people are looking to him like they look to the serpent on the pole for healing rather than what the Father actually told us about the matter, and how to be included as his remnant, as his child, as his one written in the book of life. I mean, those words get very, very, I don't know, even for those of us that, you know, have our eyes open to Paul, I find a lot of times we steer clear of that subject because maybe it's that little bit of Paul still in some of us that wants to hold on to the blood of the Lamb theology type of situation. So,
right.
You know?
I think so. I don't necessarily have a clear-cut answer for you or anything. But I go back where Satan, the devil, speaking to him in the wilderness, and he says to him, all that you see here, everything around you, I'll give it to you. All you need to do is just bow down and worship me. And Yeshua says to him, basically, beat it, Satan. You know the rules. We're to worship Yahuwah or Elohim only. And him only do we serve.
Sounds kind of like what Sennacherib said to Hezekiah, doesn't it? And Hezekiah fell for it.
And Hezekiah, actually, he didn't get sick until after that incident with him showing Sennacherib his wealth and giving it into the hands of Sennacherib. So it wasn't before. He didn't get sick before. It wasn't after he got healed. It was he got sick because of what he did when his, who was it? I can't remember his name. Rabshakeh, I don't remember his name. They came, they were all renting their clothes and saying, look what you've done. And then Hezekiah did the same thing. He ended up renting his clothes, but by this time he was already getting sick. But again, just an observation. It was afterwards. And I'm not sure what you, meant.
Read through all that, so, and I noticed that as I was just reading through that as well.
And then as far as the blood of the Lamb, are you saying that that Yahushua's blood is ineffective, not efficacious in the salvation process, in the redemption process?
I think that our theology and doctrine on that needs to be revisited.
Yeah.
Meaning,
once you remove,
I get that.
Once we remove Paul's rendition of things, what are we left with? Because I asked somebody last night, when did you usually ever say anything about his own blood? Yeah.
My question is how to interpret Isaiah 53, because there would be nothing about his blood or about him being put to death for our sake at all if it weren't for Isaiah 53. The question is, what is the appropriate understanding of Isaiah 53? Because it says he was beaten for our transgressions. So there's something there, even though he said that in the parable of the farmers, the bad people killed him, and then the righteous people were given the land. So is it related to his blood? I don't know if it's, okay. It's also in Leviticus 17 though. In Leviticus 17, when it talks about the sacrifices, and it says, "And I have given my blood, I have poured out my blood for you," which implies there is something there. But what is the extent of it? I don't have a good answer for that.
They say life is in the blood.
Right, and isn't that what Hasatan is after, even right now in our day and age? Why is the blood so important to want to destroy it as far as Hatan is concerned? Going after the remnant of her seed. There is power in the blood that Yahusha spilled while being nailed to the tree. I truly believe that. I believe that that's what the redemption process is all about. And to dismiss that as if, it means nothing, I think we deceive ourselves to think that. Because he came to basically undo what happened in the garden when Adam and Eve sinned and ate of the forbidden fruit, based on the fact that Cain was born and he wasn't of Adam kind. So blood was exchanged in the garden. Came to do besides redeeming his people Israel. So to say that his blood has no meaning, I think we deceive ourselves, and I think we're basically nullifying the whole plan of Yahuwah from the beginning, from the foundation of the earth. So I don't agree with that aspect. I think maybe more research should be done in that regard if we're unclear on that. But in my mind, in my heart of hearts, in my mind's eye, I see that Hasatan has always, from the very beginning, has tried to prevent exactly that, the blood of Yahusha, who is the life-giving force. And that's why even
are you talking about the shed blood through the sacrifice? Are you putting your faith in the sacrifice of the one put up on the pole to heal you? I mean, I just feel that if we had never heard of Christianity, I don't think that we would be putting our trust in blood. I mean, I just feel that we are in need of going back to the beginning and revisiting what we believe and why we believe it. To come out of Babylon requires unraveling ourselves backwards from layers of untruth that we've been fed for so long that we don't even... You know, it's not even an easy thing to decipher between what we believe because it's the tradition that was passed on to us versus what the Father actually said.
Right. So then are we saying that what happened in Exodus and the blood of the Lamb being put on the doorpost has no significance whatsoever? Why was blood necessary to be put on those doorposts? It could have been just hyssop. It could have been just, water or, a branch of some tree or a palm branch or something, an olive branch. It could have been anything. Why was there the blood that was put on the doorpost?
Why not just a mezuzah?
Yeah, see? The fact that the door, the dollar, right, that what is the door that we must enter through to have the redemption process? And that door was enveloped in blood as far as the Israelites were concerned when they were leaving.
And the dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which guard the commandments of Yahuwah and have the testimony of Yahusha, HaMashiach.
And that's exactly what we're going through right now.
When did he when did you...
Galatians 12:17.
When did Yahusha say, you are covered in my blood? My blood covers you. Trust in my blood. Never. When does Yahusha say the word? When does Yahusha even use the word once, bride? Never. Zero.
I get that. I get that.
This is what we're talking about. When we remove Paul, what are you left with? Now, I see the part where he says to Abraham, I will provide the lamb. And then when we read, is it Jasher where Hasatan causes a ram to get his horns caught in a thicket. And Abraham believes that that ram is actually a lamb. Well, he misunderstood Yahuwah or something, he meant ram, not lamb. But and Hasatan causes, deception to come over Abraham there. And Abraham believes that this ram's caught by Yahuwah's method, but no, it turns out it was Hasatan. And then he sacrifices this ram to Yahuwah. I think, I'm pretty sure there's a big misunderstanding there. Yeah.
But
it is Jasher. Yeah, thank you.
I'm not sure exactly what the extent, all I can say is that we have Leviticus 17, we have the Passover, and we have Isaiah 53. Now, none of it directly, it does say in Leviticus 17 that he poured his blood out for us, but it doesn't say anywhere that we should trust in the blood. And so the question is, what is the extent? What is the purpose of the blood there, the relevance? Because
ratification of a covenant. It's the ratification of a covenant, as he says, this is my blood, which is poured out for many.
Yes.
This is what it represents.
Yes, and that covenant, how was that covenant broken? It was the miscegenation. It had to do with miscegenating the blood. Basically, to put it in nothing.
But the law and
the
Torah and the prophets were until John the Baptist. That's what he said. The law and the prophets were until John the Baptist.
Well, he was
since
the,
that time,
he was
every
the
man.
Torah.
Yeah.
Yahusha was the walking Torah. The Word.
And the life of men. I am the light of the world. I am the life of men. Yeah, the light of men. I don't know,
but I'll tell you one thing.
Yeah.
I tell you one thing. When I have a certain ailment or when there's something, really wrong, when I pray in Yahusha's name and apply his blood over that situation, the situation is gone. It disappears. And there's no way that you can tell me that that's the work of Hasatan. No way.
Okay, I won't try.
Okay. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It just, there's a lot of things that we're reading into a lot of books and extra canonical books and even in the Bible itself. But nobody wants to pay attention to the fact that the scriptures are being supernaturally changed before our very eyes day by day, exponentially since 2012. I don't know what happened in 2012, but that's when I started noticing things. And so if these things are happening supernaturally in the scriptures, why couldn't they be happening in the other writings of Dead Sea Scrolls and, going back, thousands of years? It is happening in the scriptures that were not there before. Point being, the verse that I just gave a little while ago, that Yahuwah hisses, and he's calling out the flies of Egypt. that was never in there. And yet we read over it as if it really happened. And that's really...
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, there's a two-minute warning here, if anybody can hear me.
Yep.
Yeah, we have just a minute here. So thanks, everybody, for fellowshipping with us today. Sorry to cut you off, Debbie. We have another show coming up next, Keys to the Kingdom, on Freedom Ozzer Radio. So if you'd like to hang on for that, you just need to refresh your browser or call in 319-527-6208. And we look forward to everyone joining us again next week. Have a wonderful rest of your Sabbath.
You too. Thank you, Rachel. Shabbat
shalom.
Shalom.
Shalom.